From the Opubco studios at Britain and Broadway, you're listening to a News OK podcast.
Hi, this is Brandy McDonald, entertainment writer for The Oklahoman and News OK, and this is your weekly entertainment podcast. I'm joined today by our features, entertainment intern, and all-around pretty decent fellow, Nathan Poppy. We are talking about movies that are opening this week. We are going to go back in time, just briefly to start out with, to the big movie that opened Wednesday, Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. And I have to say that it was not more than meets the eye. It was more like more is not better is really the theme of this movie, because Michael Bay made it extremely explodey. And, you know, I was really kind of disappointed, Nathan, because I thought the first Transformers was, yeah, it was, you know, overly big and loud and explodey.
It was passable summer fare, popcorn movie.
It was fun. You know, you didn't feel like you injured your brain too badly. You saw some cool giant robots. And, you know, it had its problems. But, I mean, it was passable and fun and entertaining. And, you know, you could get into it for a couple hours and you could leave without feeling too damaged. This movie, Revenge of the Fallen, is actually 2.5 hours, and I still feel offended by it. So obviously the damage has been a little more lasting. But basically, what you got here is something that is big, loud, and dumb. Giant robots, explosions, tanks, more giant robots, missiles, explosions, submarines, tanks, more explosions, more giant robots.
Pretty much anything,
etc.
Yeah, that can catch on fire is in this
anything
movie.
Anything that can catch on fire or shoot fire is in this movie. There are 47. I didn't even make that number up. There are 47 different Transformers in this. You can identify maybe about 8 of them, and 3 of them for sure you will want to forget. 2 of them you will never be able to forget, and you will blame Michael Bay for the rest of your existence for. But I'm not talking about the plot, because there really isn't one too much, so much. But I keep hearing this. I mean, I'm not the only person who's giving this movie a bad review by any stretch. But I keep hearing the standard response of, well, you know, it's a good action movie. All we want to do is see giant robots fight. We just want to see giant robots fight. Even those aren't that good. I mean, there's 2 or 3 giant robot fights that are very good. One with Optimus Prime, where he takes on like 3 Decepticons that are really, really, it's a really great action sequence. Most of them aren't that good. I challenge you to tell which robot is which and what side they're on in more than 2 of
they
the
just
9,000
look
robot
alike
fights.
Now?
Oh, yeah. And there's one scene where, I mean, it's toward the end, toward the big finale. I actually thought that Megatron had been killed 3 times, because so many of them looked like Megatron. I mean, at the end, it's just a bunch of silver Decepticons that come out and they all look alike. And that's just kind of, I mean, that eliminates all the fun out of it. Part of it was that they all looked very different and unique. They still move too fast to see him change. The sequences are still too choppy to really see anything. They're just sort of chaotic.
Now those robots have like thousands of moving parts, but you would never know that from the movie.
I mean, they change like that. They're not, you know, but but that being what it is, I mean, I understand for all these people who are saying, well, I'm not going to listen to this bad review of it. She doesn't know what she's talking about, because it's silly to evaluate something deeply that is about giant robots from outer space who are, you know, changing the trucks and fight each other. But I'd like to point out the fact that there is something inherently ludicrous about a billionaire playboy who dresses up in shiny red armor and fights evil. And there's something inherently ludicrous about the rabble-rousing Iowa farm boy who goes into Starfleet and 5 seconds later he's the captain of a starship. I mean, that there's some inherent foolishness.
Those are kind of hard to believe, but
yeah, but Iron Man, Star Trek.
Those are a little deeper.
Jon Favreau, J.J. Abrams. We turned good movies.
Absolutely.
Into, you know, from that kind of sort of foolish fodder. I mean, we made something really good that got great reviews, that made tons of money, that actually had things like lucid plots and character development.
Maybe a little heart, if you will.
Yeah, a little bit of heart and soul to them. And so my point is that why shouldn't we expect more from the Transformers? We can do better than this. It could definitely have been a better movie. Even if you go only because you want to see explosions for 2.5 hours, even the explosions could be better. And the whole movie around it could be a lot better. There is a lot of mindless monotony involved with this film, just because there is no real lucid plot to speak of. you know, you're, I'm very disappointed in Shia LaBeouf's performance. I mean, I thought he was a, you know, kind of a fun, geeky underdog to follow the first movie. Now he, it seems like Sam Witwicky movie star.
Uh-oh, he's turned into a rock star
now.
So
he's turned into the movie star. Megan Fox really isn't given a whole lot to do.
Well, she doesn't need to do much, apparently.
Except look like she does. I'm not going to say anything mean about it. I just can't. So much has been said already about the starring role that her assets get in this movie. But yeah, I mean, so I'm not even going to talk about the plot because, I mean, if I talked about it, I would be giving more effort to it than Michael Bay did. But I will say that probably the worst part about this movie is got to be Mudflap and Skids. We're just going to spend a moment talking about them. My statement on this is imagine if the entire Star Wars prequel trilogy had Jar Jar Binks and Watto in almost every scene. That is a level of CG obnoxiousness that is achieved.
How
with
did you survive seeing
Mudflat
this?
And Skids, who are basically jive talking gold tooth racial stereotype Autobots who are supposed to be there for comic relief. And they are so irritating that you actually, in one scene, root for Devastator to kill them.
And these are good guys.
They're supposed to be good guys. And they just sort of follow Shia LaBeouf and Megan Fox and, you know, the heroes around and just are obnoxious. That's what they do. It's supposed to be funny. Everything out of their mouth comes out obnoxious. It's too much boobs and too many curse words and too much violence for your kids. And if you're over the age of like 9 years old, you're too smart for this movie. So I really don't recommend it to anyone, except the only reason I would recommend it at all is, like I said, a couple of good fight scenes. Rainn Wilson is in it. He plays sort of a rock star professor at the college that
always funny in the office.
Goes to. He's a great actor. He is so much fun in the two scenes that he has. And then John Turturro always raises the bar on things a little bit, and he gets to come back as Agent Simmons, although he's put through some things that are pretty dehumanizing, I guess, would be a good way of putting it. I gave it 2 stars. Like I said, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. There are a couple of things that where it will fulfill your expectations, but for the most part, I think that our expectations are too low if they're fulfilled by this movie. So that is Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. We're going to move on to something that George Lang reviewed for us, but he's out on assignment. Nathan is going to run down Away We Go, which he has also seen and is supposed to be a really great film I've been hearing about.
Yes, what we found here is a movie that actually works, surprisingly.
Yay!
We have a very human film that that works well because of the chemistry of the stars in it. We have John Krasinski, who is Jim from The Office. Well, Office cast members must be busy this weekend.
They are.
And Maya Rudolph, SNL alum. And they play Bert Farlander and Verona de Toussaint. And they're trying to find the perfect place to start their family. And they just work together so well. I mean, they can just throw glances at each other. And it tells a whole story, you know, just with that one look. You know, it's communication, and it really works. It's believable, which is the exact opposite of Sandra Bullock and Ryan Reynolds in The Proposal from last weekend.
Which has obviously left Nathan scarred. We've already got scars on the soles of our interns.
But anyway, Bert and Verona, they're living in a cabin in the woods in the upper Midwest. And Verona is extraordinarily pregnant. She's 7 months along, and the couple doesn't have a plan for where they're going to go with their life. They're kind of just going blown through the wind, basically. And they visit Bert's flaky parents. It's Catherine O'Hara, always funny, and a very talented Jeff Daniels. They're leaving to Europe, so they're not even going to be there to see the birth of their grandchild. So we have Bert and Verona having nowhere to go, so they just hit the road, and they decide to just leave their house behind. And they run into some old friends. That's, you know, what the movie drives on. And some of these friends have varying success. Allison Janney and Jim Gaffigan are very detached, sad, not good parents, taking their kids to the racetrack every weekend. I'm not a parent. Brandy might know more about that than me, but I don't think that's a good idea.
I don't take my kids horse racing, so they're too young to gamble.
And like, then
life's enough of a gamble.
And on the opposite spectrum, we have Maggie Gyllenhaal, who plays Ellen, who's friends with Bert, and she's just this new age, kooky, crazy new age parenting lady. And it's it's kind of bizarre. And some of these sequences, they're very over the top. All their friends are a little odd. But, you know, it's Bert and Verona that keep you coming back. They just work really well together. And this film, it really, really hits its stride in the third act when it just becomes very, very reflective and a lot quieter and less cute than the first two acts of this film.
How many stars did George give this, and would you agree?
George gave this 3 stars, and I completely agree with it. It's a stripped-down film compared to Sam Mendes' other works, but it's just because it's so believable, because it's so much quieter than Transformers, you're getting a real interesting story about just two people that are trying to find their way home.
Well, and it sounds like it's a great platform for Maya Rudolph to actually show what she can do. I met her a few years ago at the Shrek, the third junket, and she came across as somebody who had such a great sense of humor, but also somebody who was just really whip sharp, and at the time really didn't have any projects coming up. And pretty much acknowledged that she had nothing going for her at the moment. And so you just kind of, if you met her that day, hoped for good things for her. And sounds like she's getting a chance to really prove her worth as an actress. So
absolutely. They become, her and Krasinski become a believable couple, which is, you know, something special.
Not always achieved, as you have noted.
But, absolutely.
We see another kind of possible breakout role in another movie that George reviewed for us that I'll be running down, called My Sister's Keeper. And he's referring to Sofia Vassilieva. I probably completely botched that in every way possible. But she is an alumnus from the TV show Medium. And she's at the center of this very sort of tear-jerking drama that's called My Sister's Keeper, that is based on a novel by Jodi Picco, who's very good about jerking tears. But generally, her movies get made into Lifetime original movies, but in this case, it's been given a full-fledged big screen treatment, and George says that it actually is it's a pretty rich adaptation, a pretty interesting and thoughtful family drama. Pretty modest, but it does bring some pretty big ethical and legal issues, family issues to be thought about. Does get bogged down in too many really sentimental musical montages, so to speak. But basically, Sophia plays Kate. She was diagnosed with leukemia when she was a toddler. And for her parents, Sarah and Brian, who are played by Cameron Diaz and Jason Patrick, their whole focus became keeping her alive, so they conceived a donor child, who's Anna, who grows up to the age of 11 to be Abigail Breslin, and she's pretty much provided Kate with anything she needed to survive. She needed bone marrow, she donates bone marrow. She needs blood, she donates blood, because they're a perfect genetic match. But after 11 years of this, whenever Anna is told she's going to have to undergo surgery to give Kate a kidney transplant, she decides to finally draw a line, say no, sue her parents for medical emancipation. And that leaves her parents feeling very sort of betrayed and defensive. And Anna hires Campbell Alexander, who's played by Alec Baldwin, who's playing somebody very similar to his 30 Rock character from the sounds of it, who is just this ambulance chaser lawyer to represent her in the case. And her mother is going to be defending herself because her mother is a former attorney. And basically we get to see through this case all of the different issues related to genetic engineering, organ harvesting, the right to die, things like that. And in the meantime, Kate is getting sicker and sicker, and also finding sort of first love with a fellow cancer patient, played by Thomas Dekker. So George said that basically they should really sell boxes of Kleenex with the popcorn.
I'm going to need a box of Kleenex right now, just talking about it.
But he said that there are too many of these sort of overly long musical montages in there that really contribute little to the narrative, just kind of bog things down and take away from what are really some fine performances. So, but he gave it 3 stars. That's a lot more than I expected. Whenever I heard that George was going to go and see it, I expected him to not like it at all, but gave it 3 stars. So there's some value to this film and George's assessment. So My Sister's Keeper.
Okay.
And you have got our final of our 4 films, Every Little Step.
Every Little Step, yeah. This movie was born in 2006 when there were open casting calls for the Broadway revival of the musical A Chorus Line. And it's a very, very long-running Broadway show.
Right.
It's I believe, the 4th longest in history. And when these open casting calls were made, thousands of people showed up. And apparently, you know, waiting in a long line is like half the point of, you know, getting to the American dream these days. That's what it seems like from American Idol. And so you think you can dance. So after people finally get out of the line and move in, we see countless auditions and countless, you know, singing and dance numbers. All these people trying to make it, you know, into the Broadway production of A Chorus Line. And, you know, this movie brings in a lot of the original cast from A Chorus Line, a lot of the directors. And they slowly whittle away at this giant pool of contestants until there's a lot less. And, you know, this movie kind of just scratches the surface. It never really, you know, gets in depth to what it's like to, you know, see these people struggle. Because A Chorus Line, it's this big musical. You know, it's a story about dancers by dancers. And it's very sentimental, heartfelt, you know, production. And you're not going to see that in this film as much, because it's just these people just dancing and dancing and dancing. You never get to really find out who they are. And that's kind of unfortunate.
So all the mechanics, none of the heart.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of like watching like a DVD bonus feature almost of, you know, that you'd find on a DVD copy of A Chorus Line. You know, it's not really all that in depth. However, it does have a lot of success when it you know, goes into the history of the actual A Chorus Line. And you're going to learn about Michael Bennett, who sat down, you know, a room full of dancers and just talked to them for hours and hours and hours and recorded them on a reel-to-reel tape, you know, just to get their experiences and to get their stories. And you find out that that's what A Chorus Line is based on, is those series of interviews. And that's all very, very interesting. But I wish I could say the same about all the people that are in the movie. You know, they just spend so much time dancing and wiping away mascara-filled tears that I just wanted to know more about them. And you kind of get some of the backstory of this girl named Jessica, but there's just so many other characters that kind of overshadow her. So that's kind of unfortunate. But, you know, overall, though, it's pretty entertaining. If you're a Chorus Line fan, this movie is definitely for you. But as far as a documentary, it's passable.
Oh, so it sounds like they kind of missed the point of their own movie a little bit.
A little bit.
So they didn't really get what was the interesting kernel out of it and highlight it. So how many stars did you give it?
I'm going to give it 2.5 because, you know, it doesn't quite have that spirit, but it does capture it every now and then.
Okay. And those reviews, with the exception of Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen, which is already up on News OK and on my blog.
Destroying theaters as we speak.
Already destroying and breaking records, which is unfortunate. But for the rest of these reviews, Friday's Weekend Look section, we also have features with, lots of people who are involved in the movies. We've got some features on My Sister's Keeper, including one that Nathan has done, some features on some of the actors who are in... Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen, so including Tyrese Gibson, and you know, so you can look, check out all that in the Weekend Look section or on newsok.com. And obviously, next time around, we'll talk about next week's movies. Thanks for listening.